We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Welcome to the RotoViz College Football Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Stefan LeCoe, joined by my co-host, Matt Wispay. This podcast is being brought to you by Blue Wire, Sunday Ticket, Deal Dash, and Bet Online. We have a great show for you today. We are going to be joined by Dave Softy Mahler, who is the voice of Softy and Dick on KJR Seattle Radio 950. You will want to listen to that. Before we get into that, though, Matt, how are you doing today?
Shitty.
Yes.
Honestly, like this week has just been like gut punch after gut punch. So, I mean, obviously the news came out this past Sunday. And it was like, basically it was all these leaked reports of, oh, all this different news, but the Big Ten is very likely to cancel. They're contacting all the other conferences and trying to get a unified front. And to be honest, I'd kind of been expecting it. Like there was, as much as I loved the idea of college football coming back, you and I have been very much on the line of like, we hope it's back. We hope it's coming back. And you were
even more positive on the podcast than you were in just you and I's private conversations where you were like, it's not happening.
I've been trying to keep my like expectations low just because of the fact that, I mean, let's be honest, the NCAA is not as well run as a lot of other organizations. They're definitely not as well run as the NBA. They're definitely not as well run as the NHL, which is a weird statement considering where the NHL used to be. It's not as well run even as baseball, which, by the way, baseball was an absolute mess in trying to come back. But when you talk about the NCAA, how they basically have no power. And so it comes down to all these individual conferences and it all becomes this very dirty feeling. And the truth is, if this was all about health and this was 100% about health, I would be telling you right now that they made the absolute right decision, that they 100% came out and made this perfect decision that was absolutely necessary. And I fear that I'm not being cynical in assuming that it's not. Because when you hear things like Wisconsin a week ago announced that by playing a season without fans, they would be taking, I believe they said, a $700 million loss, and that they were asking fans to donate to the fund to cover up these losses. And you have like that type of info. And then you see things like, you see reporting that the conferences, the story that we're hearing is that they're really like trying to make a decision based around COVID. But when there's these reports coming out that it's the other things that are really the big fear, and they're really just using COVID as the excuse to kick the can down the road for things like name, image, likeness, and potential unionization. And it's the stuff like Pac-12 United that truly scared them. And so then you get this type of stuff, and now you're just sitting there like, no. It's purely about this one report about a new heart issue that we were concerned about. So, yeah. So basically Sunday night happens. We start seeing the reports coming out that the Big Ten is likely to cancel their season. And then following all that, you get the We Are United, We Want to Play movement with Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, and all these college football players. It started to give you optimism, because maybe the Big Ten kind of did what a lot of people do when they wanted to push in they wanted to push out a message to kind of get feedback. And the feedback they got was almost universally, the players want to play, give them a way to play and figure it out. Like, figure out a way, because I mean, it just seemed like, oh, well, we're opening campuses, so if we can open campuses, why is it uncomfortable for them to play? Why can't they be playing football? What makes that substantially more dangerous? So whatever. So now all of a sudden we start rolling into the week. We know that there's a meeting on Tuesday, that the Big Ten is meeting on Tuesday at 10:30 a.m. to have a final vote. And now overnight they've come up with this message that maybe they're going to push the season back to September 26th, back when the Big Ten schedule was really originally going to start. And the problem with it is that all that did was get everyone's hopes up. Like this story bugs me, because I was literally driving. I was listening to the Bucknuts Morning Five podcast, and they were talking about how it was inevitable. This movement had gotten to them, and we were going to get the news that they had broke it, or that they had changed their mind and were moving to September 26th. And as I'm turning into a parking lot, my phone buzzes. I look, and it's the notification I've been really dreading. Big Ten has canceled their season. And then I think it was like an hour later, the Pac-12 has canceled their season. And then you start seeing the adamant ones that the ACC and SEC are going to play. And it's just, what's going on with the Big Ten that we're seeing something so dramatically different? So, yeah, this sucks. I'm really, really heartbroken. As a fan, I'm super low risk and all this. Like, for me, I'll be fine in 2 months, but boy, does it suck right now. But think about things like Sean Wade is a potential first round cornerback who basically came back because he'd played slot corner for his first 3 years in school. And he was seen as a third round pick in the NFL draft, but he was going to get a chance to play. He was going to get to play on the outside, and that really dramatically improves his chances to move up to a first round pick. They move back to the spring, and the NFL doesn't work with college football to try and like adjust the draft time. He ain't playing. So why did he stay in school? So yeah. They just stole a year from him. When you get things like, kids like Justin Fields played 14 games for Ohio State. What are the chances he's coming back? I mean, if the NFL does not work with the NCAA, that number is zero. And then you think about just like, there's a guy, there's some probably lesser known stories, but, and I only know Ohio State, so I'm sorry about this, but like Jonathan Cooper basically redshirt last year, and he missed the mission, or he came back to play one of his four games in the Michigan game, missed the playoff intentionally, so he could come back for this year and play a full year. And that's likely now stolen from him, because I don't think spring football is going to happen. So, and then the most heartbreaking to me is this guy by the name of Justin Hilliard, who had to fight to get a sixth year of eligibility because he'd been injured so much through college, was granted that year of eligibility. And now, hey, that season that we just granted you, well, it's gone now. So you either have to fight probably like heck to get another year, which who wants to do 7 years?
My God.
Or your career's over. So it's just, it's so heartbreaking to think of like these kids that all they wanted to do is play. And I do say this with some level of sincerity. We have college campuses are opening up right now. Like most of these kids are getting emails right now preparing them to move on to campus. Why do we think it is safe for them to be living on campus in these close quarters? But these kids, you're just telling these athletes who are telling you that they want to play, that are tested regularly, have signed. And I know everyone hated the waivers that came out, but a lot of these waivers were in agreement with the school that you would follow a certain protocol, that you wouldn't go out and you would be risking severe punishment by leaving and going and not practicing social distancing, that all these kids that are telling you they're willing to do this, that it is now not safe for them to play football against other schools largely doing the same thing. So you're saying that it's safe for them to be in these mass gatherings on campus, but they're not safe to be in smaller gatherings.
Right. And before people are like, yeah, but everyone will just go to school online. Like, I know for a fact, because my nanny, who she goes to a Pac-12 school, she goes to CU, she has two of her classes in person on campus. Like, she's going to be around people, which brings up a whole another set of questions for me with having her nanny. But it's like, come on, man. Like, what's happening here?
Well, and it's just the things they've said, like, all summer they said, well, we can't have football if we don't have people on campus. Well, you're bringing people back on campus, and I feel like there's a lot of political reasons behind that, which we won't get into, but you brought kids back on campus. You're now telling these athletes that they have to go to classes. Now, I think a lot of the athletes will probably be recommended by their coaching staff to take a full online schedule, but even so, they're still having to be on this campus with tens of thousands of people. And in the case of Ohio State, I think it's literally 50,000 students, that's somehow safe. But them going and playing in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center every day where they get tested multiple times a week, which it's just, I don't know.
It seems hypocritical for sure.
It's definitely really, and it feels like it's a money thing where you have schools like Wisconsin, Rutgers, Indiana, Purdue, that just didn't have the same type of funding and are looking at this and saying this could be potentially bad for us and this could potentially be a very bad season for us. But the truth is, I mean, Michigan State, I think it was Michigan State who came out and said immediately after the ruling of canceling the season, like, there's going to be layoffs due to this. Like, people are going to lose their jobs because of this in order to do cost saving. So
yeah,
it's just baffling to me. I can't defend the Big Ten on this sense. The hard thing that came out that is real is if you are an athlete, it affects them at apparently a higher rate if they catch COVID, and you have essentially bed rest for 2 to 3 months if you catch this specific heart thing, because if in that stretch your heart starts to beat too fast, you're at risk for cardiac arrest. And it's terrifying.
Yeah, but I say all this, like, myocarditis or whatever.
That thing that came out. Yeah, I can't say words that are longer than three syllables. So, but when that comes out, but then you see things like the Big 12 then being proactive and saying, well, we're going to require them doing EKGs. And again, it's not perfect, but if you're doing COVID testing and you're doing EKGs, and I know everyone thinks this is super invasive, but EKGs are really not. You're doing what you can to make it safe. And I think the answer was, let's continue to put these protocols in place. Let's provide you know, assistance to the schools that are really going to struggle through this. And yet somehow we're in August and it seems like they just crossed their fingers really hard that everything was going to work out. And when it wasn't perfect, it's gone. So it's a bummer. I think we've watched the last college football snap of at least Justin Fields. I mean, we lost a whole bunch of fun people last week. Both Bateman and Rondale Moore had already, like, we were playing. This is what's the worst part about this podcast is you and I were planning to come on here last week. We almost did an emergency podcast when Rashad Bateman dropped. I was sitting in a lake house and we were like, do we need to do an emergency podcast? Because Bateman, and then Micah Parsons, the most fun defensive player
who we had just gotten done talking about like the week before.
The most fun player in college football on defense. He then announces his, and then Rondale Moore announces he was dropping. And like we were planning on talking about this stuff. It was huge news. I was going to come on here and make a joke that we picked the worst week to take a vacation because all this news dropped.
Yeah.
And then the news that mattered hit and kind of crushed all the dreams that we'd been hoping for. So, yep. I mean, I'll be very honest. If the SEC and ACC play football, and Big 12 play football, I will watch so much college football.
Sure. Absolutely.
I mean, this won't make me turn off college football. We'll continue to get on here. We'll talk. I don't know who I'm going to root for because I guess in theory, I can't root for Gundy. I'm not rooting for the other OSU.
No, it's easy, dude, because you know me, like I've got a team in every conference. So
different.
We're rooting for the U.
Yep.
We're rooting for the Wolfpack. We're rooting for the Razorbacks. Like it's gonna be brutal. It's gonna make us cry a lot.
I'm gonna root for See, the thing is like I want Trevor Lawrence to go out on top because I want Trevor Lawrence to be amazing. Like I want his draft stock to just be perfect and flawless and then to say, oh, he's an even better prospect than Andrew Luck was. Like I want that to happen. So, yeah, I mean, I'll root for Clemson to win all their games. I'll root for Alabama to be smart and say, well, this is a loss season anyway. Why the heck would we waste our time with Mac Jones? And I'll probably just, I'll find a fun team. I'm rooting for North Carolina.
Yeah.
That's it.
You love your boy, Hal. So that makes sense. So it's always difficult because I'm an old guy. Like, doing movie references, but like you remember Dumb and Dumber,
yeah,
where he's like freaking out and he's like, our pets heads are falling off. Well, last night, so I get home, heard the news, I'm bummed out. Last night, go to feed my kids' fish, who we moved from Seattle down here, like we drove him from Seattle to Boulder. He died yesterday. I'm like, you know what, 2020 sucks. I hate life. Like it's just the worst. Last week, the week before, my other son, his pet frog died. So like, it's just the worst. Pets are dying. Football is being canceled. And, it's rough. It's just not fun. And, I think it's really difficult. Like it's hard to know what is the right thing to do, but I agree with you. Like some of the reasoning we're given, it doesn't seem to line up with other actions that these universities are also making. It's hard.
At least with like the Mac, like we all kind of know the Mac is lying when they came out and said it was medical reasons. Like the Mac, when they canceled, if you believe that the Mac canceled because of health reasons, I'm just going to come out and tell you, you're wrong. They didn't. They canceled because teams like Bowling Green had two games that were seven-figure paydays on their schedule. They were going to make over $1 million playing Illinois, and they were going to make over $1 million playing against Ohio State. They lost once the Big Ten went to a conference-only schedule. The MAC was going to be financially destroyed if they actually moved forward with the season. So, like, at least we knew that. The Big Ten does not have that issue. They've got the Big Ten Network. They're freaking loaded. All these schools have individual deals where they're making additional money. The idea that any one of these major schools is going to become in like a financial hardship by losing the ability to put fans in their stadium. Yeah. Is it going to take a hit compared to like the previous year? Sure. guess what? You can probably hold off on that new building you are going to build that, let's be honest, probably is you're only doing so you can build a new building. You can probably hold that one off 1 year while we get through this crisis. So it's just, it's so frustrating and it's so annoying. And it, you just hate to see it because the people getting hurt by this, I'm going to say this, screw the fans that are getting hurt by this. We shouldn't matter. Think about all the players that all they wanted to do was come back and play. Think about all the guys who were seventh round draft pick potential guys who said, you know what? I had a great summer. I'm going to have an opportunity to actually get drafted and actually have a chance in the NFL, who now lost that chance. There are two offensive linemen who decided to come back after the playoff last year, who basically were told, like, you're late day two picks. But if you go back another year, we believe you have the upside of being a first round draft pick. What do they get to do now? Like, cool. Yeah. Like, I literally can't improve my draft stock other than just be jacked when I get to the combine. So,
and who's going to be invited to the combine? I mean, what is that even going to look like now? What's that based off of?
It is going to be really interesting. And truthfully, I hope people realize that if you're a school like Michigan State or you're a school like Indiana or Nebraska, or like, really, if you're in the Big Ten and you aren't Ohio State, and I'm going to even give Michigan a little bit, your recruiting is screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. Understand that your recruiting will be dramatically impacted by this, just because people these kids are going to see this and they're going to say they don't care about football as much as they do in the South. Huh? You're telling me that I have a chance to go play at Mississippi State where they're actually going to let me play football? I'm going to go there. Or it's just, I mean, there's going to be dramatic and long-lasting impacts to this. And honestly, I don't know if I can blame an 18-year-old kid who just wakes up and says, I want to play football, not wanting to be sitting in the situation where they have to worry if their conference is going to pull the trigger too quick.
Right. And even like speaking to what you were talking about with like undrafted or like late round type picks, like 30% of the league right now is made up of undrafted players. And now these guys are going to be, you know, potentially a year older without having played football and no tape for their final year or one of their years. It's just a mess. And it really sucks for these guys, like you said, like these individual players. It sucks for us too, as fans. It sucks for us as podcasters, and it just sucks for everyone. It's just such a disappointment. I'd love to kind of pick your brain a little bit about what this means for Devi, what this means for, just looking at fantasy football in general.
Thank our sponsors before we do this. Yeah. So,
and we do have some good news, like at least, we may not have all the college football, but there is some good news.
So Sundays, they're coming back in the NFL, and with NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices. Plus, you get Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sunday ever. Use the code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFL Sunday Ticket.tv and use the promo code BLUEWIRE.
Yeah, I mean, what better time to do that if we're not going to be having, you know, half the games that we're used to with because I know you and I, we consume both NFL and college a lot. So this is just a great opportunity for people to be able to catch even more football. And it may not, I mean, it's called NFL Sunday Ticket, but if the SEC and ACC and Big 12 get canceled too, we'll probably have NFL Saturday and Sunday going on Sunday Ticket. So do check that out. It's a great deal. And I'm excited that, we may not be able to enjoy all the college football that we want, but we'll still have the NFL. Yeah. So I also should have mentioned this at the top, of course. We have updated our Devi rankings, you and I. It's going to be on the website pretty soon in that new format. How many changes are you going to be making to your rankings.
I hate to say it, but probably a lot.
Yeah.
So for me, and the biggest reason I like quite a few of mine are going to change are I had a lot of projected position, like projected improvements for this year to people's profiles. So probably one of the guys that'll take the biggest hit for me is a player I love. Amon-Ra St. Brown. He is a player that I have, I believe, as a top 10 overall wide receiver. And I think I have him as a fringe first round pick, even in super flex leagues. He is the wide receiver at USC. And one of the biggest reasons that I was so enamored with his upside was because he looked like he had potential for an alpha dog final season. So it's hard to keep him. Like, he's been about a 20 something percent market share guy. He's been a very good contributor, but this was his opportunity to potentially have the elite breakout season with even the potential upside of like an insane 40% market share, which it sounds crazy, but it's what you kind of look for. That's how you jump from being the good to the super duper elite. And he was one of those guys I was projecting to make that jump. And now without the season, I have to drop him because so much of my ranking was built on his upside for this year. And
the draft capital that would ensue, undoubtedly. Yeah.
And then, this is hurting my heart. This is hurting my heart a lot. I have to drop Chris Olave, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously, I'm holding back tears when I say this, but Chris Olave was another guy. The big reason I loved him was because I knew that coming into this year, he was a potential breakout, like potential superstar. I'm not going to drop him far. And honestly, the thing that's going to keep his Devy ranking roughly the same is people like Todd McShay. Todd McShay released a mock draft today.
He had him in the first round, didn't he?
He had him in like pick 18.
Yeah,
which is lovely. So if I continue to see stuff like that, don't assume Chris Olave will fall far. But he's kind of one of those ones too. Like, I was projecting him to have a better year than Rondale Moore and impress enough scouts that he was going to get drafted before Rondale Moore. I was projecting him to have a better year than Devonta Smith and potentially get drafted in the same round as Devonta Smith. So you're talking about a guy that is like, there was so much. And I mean, it's just kind of like now, honestly, like, so one of the guys that I basically had on my no draft list was Tomorion Terry. And it's largely because I saw him as a very good player, but at his pick, would I rather have him or would I rather trade back a couple slots and get Chris Olave? And I've been in the camp of I'm never going to pull the trigger on Terry. So, but now if there's half the games on TV and he gets to be on the spotlight game, does that help his draft stock? Does he now have a leg up on guys like St. Brown and Olave? And now he might have a chance to improve his stock. So it's hard to say. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it's good for some of my favorite guys. But I don't know. Fingers crossed it's a 2-2 Atwell season. That's what I'm rooting for.
There you go. Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, like, we haven't really had this conversation yet over at RotoViz with the other guys who do the rankings, but we're going to have to sit down and discuss it because there's so many new factors in play and a lot to consider because there's so much unknown still. Like, everything is, you know, it seems like final for now, but as we've seen, like, everything's final until it's not. So while the ACC and SEC and Big 12 intend to do things, that could all change. But I think for me, what I'll be doing is similar to you, guys who aren't going to be playing, who I was expecting big jumps from, I can't assume those anymore because I don't know what will take place in order for them to raise their draft capital, for them to to impress people. I don't know what the, like,
should I ask you about the player that has your heart? What are you doing with Journey?
I don't know. I mean, to me, he's got so much helium right now.
His stock is really on the rise in Devy leagues right now.
I don't understand it because like I was the high guy on Journey Brown a year ago, and then I feel like now I'm just normal. Everyone is caught up to me and past me, and I almost feel uncomfortable with how high he's going. But that was again based on projection, and we can't assume that he is going to get drafted before any of the guys from the SEC that are actually playing. Like, there's no way someone's going to grab Journey Brown ahead of Kylan Hill in the NFL because they probably wouldn't have anyway, of course. But that's what people were hoping for, who were drafting Journey Brown. Like, now a guy like Kennedy Brooks, if he's given the opportunity to play at Oklahoma and he really just impresses, he's going to go ahead of a guy like Journey Brown. So I don't know. And now Journey Brown may need to sit and play another year. So now you're talking about another year in college, another year further from being relevant to your fantasy football squad. So it's really hard to know with some of these guys that we were hoping to make the jump. I was actually going to bring up the running back position because you and I kind of felt differently about the running back position, where you felt there was like, you know, two really, really great options and then a pretty small tier of roughness and then a huge tier of just like massive question marks and grossness. Whereas yes. I was like, man, I know that the cream is going to rise to the top. And by the end of the year, we're going to have a nice running back group. They're going to get drafted and we're going to feel really good about it. We just don't know those names yet. And now I'm afraid we're not going to learn those names because we're not going to see people play.
I guess here's like my question is, or that goes along with that. It's like, so CJ Verdell, if they do actually push for a spring season and the NFL doesn't accommodate them, we're going to lose a lot of these fantasy relevant guys aren't going to play. So a guy like CJ Verdell, he was a guy that had been getting a pretty heavy workload. It was always going to be in a committee, but he was another guy that like another strong year, potentially a round three, like late day two kind of guy. If he does what he most likely should and is at best interest and declares for the draft and just decides I'm going to go get in the best shape I can possibly be in. I'm going to try and crush the combine. I'm going to do what I can to run a sub 4.5 40. Like, his stock is very halted. So he's like the chance of him really improving his stock at the NFL level is all going to be based on his 2019 tape, which was fine. He was probably the best member of a committee, but now you compare him to a guy like, say, Journey Brown. So what's the difference between the two? It's really going to come down to like, all right, which guy shows up and impresses us more at the combine. So
yeah,
it's going to be, it's super duper intriguing for me because I actually think this might be, and I always say this, but if you're in a league that does your rookie drafts early, there's going to be a lot less consensus about players 6 through 12 than there normally was. Like, so normally you get by about like June, you have a decent feel for who picks 1 through 12 are. There's probably a little variation. People favor one guy over another, but yeah, if you're pick 10, you might get a guy that in another league goes 5. You might get a guy that in another league goes 6 or so. Because I just think there's going to be such a variety in drafts, because what do you do with these players? Like, it's a good thing I already own Chris Olave in all my leagues. And I basically only have one traditional dynasty league left at this point, because I wouldn't know what to do with him. And knowing me, I'd probably just take him like first overall just to make sure I had him. I wouldn't, but
no,
it's just one of those things. I think that we're going to see a lot more inconsistency. And the one thing, the players it does hurt are the players that are potential like back end of the draft guys, the guys that we were really thinking like this could be the year that they break onto the scene. So for me, that was a guy like Dante Demas out of Maryland. Dante Demas was, if you look at his stats, they look eerily similar to DJ Moore, and like eerily similar. And Maryland, despite the fact that they haven't had a good quarterback since 1952, has managed to put out good wide receivers. And if you looked at him, he looked at like another guy that could have been that guy. And one of the biggest things that was really interesting about him was his main competition for targets was going to be an incoming freshman. So incoming freshman who is potentially not going to be the ball hog that he would be in like 2 years, you have this guy that the coaches know his name and that threw him the ball a ton. So Demas looked like another guy. His market share was going to potentially be crazy. Well, let's say they both Demas and this true freshman play in winter. Now the established relationship that he had with the quarterback is potentially slightly less of an advantage. So maybe his market share isn't as great as it would be had they just played in the fall. So there's so many variables when it comes to evaluating these players. And the truth is, I just think there's a pretty simple move, which is if this conference is not playing, you shift them down a few spots. And it's, unless it's a guy like, well, I'm going to kind of go on a stand here for a second and just say, if you're putting Rondale Moore as your wide receiver too, you love risk.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That is a good point.
I think I would say if anyone is trying to sell you right now that Rondale Moore is the wide receiver two in this class, that person does not play fantasy football with a risk-averse mindset. They want to play pure upside, and that's fine. And you shouldn't ever really run from upside. But we're now talking about a player who will have sat out two full seasons. And yeah, he may be a freak athlete, but we have not seen him play football in 2 years. So I really hope you're okay with that. And I really hope that he gets drafted early. But do you think the NFL is guaranteed to value him the same?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, certainly not if he would have done what people are expecting him to do.
And that's, like,
yeah.
It's just, I think he's the one for me. God, there's so many of them, but he's probably the one for me that's going to fall the most.
Well, we know we're going to be back in a couple weeks here. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And why don't we, at that point, we'll look at our rankings and see which players, because we'll be doing that in the next couple of days here. We'll be making adjustments and we can see who we moved the most and kind of figure out some of the reasons why. One of the things that I was thinking about that's going to be interesting is one of the things that RotoViz that we rely on heavily is like the age a player was drafted. And this could really screw a lot of that up if players decide to, you know, like I missed an entire season and I want to go back now, even though I'm super old for a junior or senior now. But I want to improve my draft capital potentially by my play on the field and not just what I can do in the combine. It could really mess up our models quite a bit. There might be some caveats and asterisks that we have to put in place because of how that could adjust things. But yeah, it's a whole new world out there. It's gonna be interesting to see what happens. Like you, I hope there is football at some level, even if we don't get to watch our favorite. You and I don't get to watch our favorite teams.
Yeah,
and that's the real bitch about it too is both your team and my team, your so more than mine, had a real shot this year. Like I don't think Oregon was gonna, you know.
You had a real shot at winning the Pac-12. Like we were the
favorites to win the Pac-12.
And
you were,
and there was a strong possibility of you getting a playoff spot this year. Just if you ran through the Pac-12.
Stop it. I have to stop. We have to stop. No. Oh, it's so sad.
I get it. It's just I feel your pain because you could have gotten your first playoff one since 2014. Nope. Yep. Your first since 2014. We were looking at a revenge game against Trevor Lawrence to try and ruin his college career. And for the truth of it is, like I said, the biggest pain for me as a fan is whether it's Ohio State, whether it's Alabama or Clemson, we're very much missing out on probably the potential for the greatest playoff that could have ever occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, potentially. I mean, the talent this year, I mean, maybe we think this every year and we get excited and caught up in the hype, but this year did feel special.
I mean, if Sam Howell somehow turns Sam Howell and Jaden Daniels somehow make their teams playoff contenders, that's the only way you're getting an equivalent the next year. Mm-hmm. Like that's, I know that everyone thinks this is hyperbole, but you're talking about two guys that when they came out of high school, they were the two highest rated prospects in 24/7 by a lot. And both of them playing on national championship contenders at the same time, both of them already with great college careers and great stories going with them, and we're robbed of that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, what now?
How do we not end sad?
No, I mean, we do have, as promised, we do have that interview with Dave Mahler from KJR Radio up in Seattle to talk some Pac-12 stuff, and we'll get to that right after this break. Matt wasn't able to join for that part. It's just me and Dave, so you'll get to listen to that. Before we do that, though, I do want to let you know of one more of our sponsors, and that's deal-.com. It is the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, Deal Dish is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. So go to deal-.com and use the offer code ROTOVIZ or go to deal-.fm/ROTOVIZ. That's deal-dash.fm/ROTOVIZ and check out Deal Dash. It is pretty fun. If you like auctions, it's kind of like a draft. It's good stuff. Matt, before we switch over to my interview with Dave, any parting words for our dear sweet listeners?
Still buy Chris Olave.
I love it.
Welcome into RotoViz Radio. I'm Dave Cabin, host of the RotoViz Fantasy Football Podcast. I wanted to take a moment to thank you for supporting RotoViz Radio. We love producing these shows, and we hope that you love listening to them. As a thank you, loyal podcast listeners can get 10% off of a one-year RotoViz subscription by using the promo code 2020RVRadio at checkout. We have some of the very best tools, articles, and analysts in the business, and can't wait to lead you on the path to greatness. If you haven't done so yet, do us a favor and take a minute to rate and review this podcast. Thanks again for listening. Now let's get into the show.
I'm excited to have Dave Softy Mahler join us today. Dave is one of the hosts of Softy and Dick, which airs every day from 3 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Pacific time on 950 KJR Radio in Seattle. You can listen to him from anywhere in the country, of course, on iHeartRadio. Just go to sportsradiokjr.iheart.com. Of course, you can find Softy on Twitter at SoftyKJR. Dave, how you doing, man?
I'm well. What's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on. I was recently up in the Pacific Northwest, and I was getting all excited for football and just being around everything. It was just really, really fun. And then we hear the news yesterday that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are canceling. I had already, you know, chatted with you about coming on just to talk about some of the other news going on with We Are United and whatnot. But now we had this big bombshell dropped on us. And what are your just overall thoughts just as you've been processing this over the last, day or so?
Well, it's a colossal bummer. No question about it. You know, it's it kind of falls in line with the list of things that you never thought you'd say, you know, going back to the Sonics move to Oklahoma. Right. Pete Carroll is the coach of the Seahawks, and there's no Husky football in 2020. I mean, it just sucks. And you never thought you'd live to see a day like this, never even assumed that you'd even worry about a day like this. I mean, there's just certain things that are automatic, right? You know, baseball season getting played, the Seahawks season, Husky football getting played. I mean, it's the first time ever that they've canceled the conference season, the first time since 1891 that we're not going to have a football game on Montlake. So it's just brutal to comprehend. It's borderline offensive to me almost to think about, you know, what has happened that's transpired that led to this whole thing. You know, I've been saying on the air for the past 4 or 5 months, if we get to the, you know, September and there's no football, then shame on us, I guess. Right. Well, shame on us, I guess. And, you know, shame on us doesn't necessarily just mean shame on people for not wearing a mask or shame on people for not getting the virus under control. It means shame on everybody. You know, I mean, shame on the government, shame on the Pac-12, you know, the presidents, the commissioner for not trying to figure out a way to pull this off. I mean, I got questions that are still unanswered about why they pulled the plug so early. I got the Big 12 on one hand talking about playing, and they got all these ideas on how they're going to deal with this heart defect, this heart issue that comes up if a kid gets COVID, and that apparently is okay for their doctors. I got a guy in, you know, at Duke University in the ACC saying that they think they can get this thing under control. And in the meantime, the Pac-12 is just giving up and yeah. They're just punting. So, you know, what exactly is the Big 12 doing? What exactly is the ACC doing that doesn't work for the Pac-12? I mean, obviously we have a different set of opinions here. We might have a different level of risk tolerance, to be honest with you, from one area of the country to the other, from the South and the Midwest to the West Coast. Obviously you're going from more conservative, more red to more blue and liberal as you head west to California. So this is political in a lot of ways, and it just bothers the hell out of me, and it's ridiculous. And there's a part of me that believes that if the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 play football this year, but the Pac-12 doesn't, and those conferences get through the season relatively unscathed, I think it's going to make a soft conference look even softer, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah. No, I think that's super fair, and I always appreciate your candidness. No, there's no hiding your opinions here, which is fantastic. You mentioned the commissioner of the Pac-12, Larry Scott, and the Pac-12 in general. Do you think this really will? I mean, he's not the most popular guy anyway. Just the fact that the Pac-12 network, for example, is impossible to find at times, and you know, there's a lot of reason that people don't like Larry Scott. But do you think this could be one of those things that just add on to the list of reasons why people want to see him out?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are disgusted with him, but I also think when it comes to Larry Scott, it's fair. A lot of the criticisms are fair, and I have a laundry list of criticisms that we could go over if you want, but I think in regards to this, this wasn't his call. I mean, there's 12 conference presidents that made this call, right? This is Michael Schill from Oregon. This is Anna Marie Kause from Washington. I mean, this is a conference president level type of situation and decision. There is no way in hell that Larry Scott was asked by the conference presidents to say, Larry, the ball is in your court. You go ahead and do whatever you think is right. There is no chance that Larry Scott made this decision on his own. So if you want to be upset at somebody, be upset at the conference presidents. And really, when it's all said and done, they are the ones that you should blame for everything. I mean, every criticism you've got of the Pac-12 should in the end go back to the conference presidents. If the conference presidents don't like the job Larry Scott's doing, Larry Scott wouldn't be there. If Larry Scott was making too much money, the conference presidents would make him take a pay cut or they would fire him. If the conference presidents aren't happy with the TV deal or the footprint or anything that emanates from the office in San Francisco, they would make a move. But they've kept Larry Scott on the job, right? I mean, they are the ones ultimately responsible for the fate of the Pac-12, and they are the ones that made this decision yesterday. As much as I would like to hammer Larry Scott for all of this, this is not his fault.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Do you think the other big, you know, idea is, well, maybe we get spring ball. And I know you had Rick Neuheisel on the show, and he thinks that that's a possibility. And you've had other guests on your show that don't. Where do you land? Where do you think we'll be with spring ball? I mean, is it even possible to play two seasons within 8 months or what's going to happen there? What do you think?
Well, I do find it funny that health and safety is the number one concern of the conference, yet we're talking about putting the football players out on a field in March or April and giving them three months off as opposed to 9 months off or 8 months off, right? We're cutting the recovery time in half. And there's a reason why these kids take that kind of time off, because guys that get banged up and suffer serious injuries the previous year need 9 months to recover for the following season. So if a star sophomore player, for example, who's got at least one more year, anybody who's got at least one more year, not just of eligibility, but where you know they're coming back. Like if you've got a star quarterback who's a junior, yes, he's got eligibility, but there's no way Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, guys like that are coming back to college football. The minute they're eligible for the NFL, they're gone. So I'm talking about guys that we kind of know are going to come back and have to spend at least one more year. Sophomores, freshmen and sophomores in college. Those guys go out and they get hurt in the spring. ACL, you know, whatever, for example. Liz Frank, Achilles, blah, blah, blah. They're done. They're not going to play in 2021 in the fall. They are finished because they will never have enough time to recover. So that's a factor for me. You know, how kids' bodies get beat up during the spring session and then have to come back again, do it in the fall, is a concern. Liability issues there would also be a concern. You know, keep in mind for people that say, well, what about spring practice? What about spring football? They don't do anything in spring football.
Yeah.
They're in helmets and shorts in spring football. And the spring game is basically just a freaking glorified practice. It's a goddamn walkthrough, for crying out loud. There's no contact in spring football, hardly at all. So if they play, you know, 7 or 8 games in the spring of full contact, actual what you would see in the fall football, that's totally different than what these guys have done their entire life. And nobody has any idea how the players would respond to that. Nobody has any idea if the fans would even be into it. Nobody has any idea how many games you could play. Would there be a Final Four? Would there be bowl games? We have no idea what the hell that thing would look like. And I got to tell you, people that say, I don't like it, or I'm not in favor of it, I don't want that, for example, or I'll love it, I can't wait to see it. Nobody has any idea how they'll respond to something like that because you've never seen it before. It's just like people that, you know, tried to bag on baseball and the 60-game baseball season or the NHL bubble or the NBA bubble. Let's try it. Let's see how we feel about it, and maybe we'll get to week 3 or 4 in March, and if it's terrible and we hate it, then we've made up our decision. I just don't want college football to be starting something in February and then having to shut it down in April or late March because players are dropping like flies and getting banged up. So I guess in kind of a long-winded kind of way, man, there's a part of me that thinks, you know what, maybe you're better off just shutting the whole thing down, regrouping, getting everybody ready, getting your ducks in, you know, in a row, trying to figure out who's going to play, who's going to go to the NFL, who's coming back, and we'll see you in September of 2021. Because the other factor there, if you play in the spring, can you play a full 12-game schedule starting in September?
And you might be missing 2 seasons, right?
Not just 2 seasons, but you'd be missing two non-conference schedules. You've already lost 1 game with Michigan if you're Washington. Can you afford to, you know, miss another one? So there's a part of me, and there's also a part of a lot of people I talk to that think it might be the best idea just to shut her down and just target September of 2021, which would suck because that means you're waiting 20 months. 20 months.
God.
Washington plays in the Vegas Bowl in December of 2019. It'd be 20 damn months until you saw him back on the field, and that stinks.
Yeah, no, it's just awful. It's just awful. What do you think the chances are that the SEC, ACC, and now, you know, it looks like the Big 12 are all pushing forward? Do you think, if you have to guess, do you think that they're going to be able to even, actually start their season? And if they do you think they'll be able to play it out? I mean, again, it's impossible to really predict, but from people you've talked to, what do you think is the most likely outcome there? Do you think they're actually going to go through with this?
Yeah. Well, it's hard to imagine. It really is. You know, it's hard to imagine 3 conferences going in Power 5 and 2 of them not. I mean, that just sounds absolutely ridiculous. It seems foreign. It's hard to even digest the idea of 60% of Power 5 playing football and 40% not. But it sounds to me like the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC, in a lot of ways, that they got access to the same information the Pac-12 does and that the Big 10 does. I don't think the doctors in those conferences are hiding anything from anybody. I mean, hell, it was on Twitter. You can go back and look at the Pac-12 medical report. Nicole Harbach from The Athletic had it today on her Twitter account. So this is public information. If I can read it, then Greg Sankey can read it, who's the commissioner of the SEC. You know, all these guys can read it. So they obviously have made a decision that they're willing for now to accept the risk that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten were not willing to accept. So you go from point A to point B is, okay, how many flare-ups do you have in camp? All right, then how many flare-ups do you have during the regular season? How many flare-ups is too much? How many hospital visits is too much? I think what we got to get around here is the idea that if a kid gets COVID, it's not the end of the world, right? I mean, kids are going to get COVID. Just like players in the NFL are going to get COVID, baseball players are going to get COVID, NBA, hockey, anybody playing organized sports right now has a chance to acquire the virus. But how do you respond? How does that guy quarantine? How many people does he come in contact with after he tests positive? Is he showing symptoms? Is he in the hospital? Is he asymptomatic? I mean, these are all questions that need to be answered. And frankly, I think that there are some folks out there, Stephen, that want nothing to do with one player testing positive. And if that's the case, then the Pac-12 made the right call to shut down. But I think the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, they think of it differently. They're not going to panic. They're not going to, you know, go for the dramatics just because a kid has tested positive for the coronavirus. And by the way, you know, not having these kids play in the fall means that they don't have as much structure fall as they normally have. Yes, a lot of them are staying on campus for meetings, workouts, all that kind of stuff. But they don't have anywhere near the structure throughout the week that they would have had if there would have been a college football season. So these guys can go out and party and acquire the virus just as easily, man.
Yeah, or more easily. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, it's rough. It's really difficult. Now, one of the things I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on here is if the SEC and ACC do, in fact, go forward, I'm thinking about a guy like Elijah Molden, who decided to come back for his final year here at Washington. He has the possibility to, you know, really increase his draft capital, but not if he's watching from the couch like you and I. Do you think players like him or others who could make it on a roster in the ACC, SEC pretty easily, guys like Justin Fields, do you think they're going to try to transfer?
No, Justin Fields, I don't think so. Trevor Lawrence, if the ACC for whatever reason doesn't go, you know, players like that. Penei Sewell would be a better example because the Pac-12 has already shut down the starting left tackle for Oregon. Penei Sewell and Justin Fields are probably top 10 picks in the NFL draft. So, those guys, the idea of going and transferring somewhere, I don't think makes a lot of sense unless they love college football, which I don't think that they do love it enough to go out and risk injury. Right. And, you know, change their draft status. I mean, the best example I can give you that, you know, Michael Porter Jr., coming out of high school, was a top five pick in the NBA draft. Goes to Missouri, breaks his back, misses almost the entire season, and sees his draft status fall by about six or seven spots. So, in the end, Michael Porter Jr. probably would have been better off from a draft perspective of just not playing college basketball at all. And just sitting out and training for a year the way some other guys are doing. So from a football perspective, if you're Penei Sewell and you're Justin Fields, players like that, I believe, are playing college football because they have to, because they can't go to the NFL, okay? Now their seasons are over, so what do? Do you go transfer somewhere else and risk blowing your knee out? Or do you just say, you know what, if we're not going to play and I don't have to play, but I have to sit out one more year because I got to be 3 years removed from high school to play in the NFL, I'll go sign with an agent and I'll go train for the next year and get ready for the draft next April. So I think guys like that, that are already locked for the first round, likely would sit out. A guy like an Elijah Molden, a guy like a Levi Onwuzurike, maybe a guy like a Joe Tryon, for example, may say, yeah, you know what, if I can go play somewhere else and increase my draft stat, maybe I'll do something like that. But I'm curious to see what the NCAA allows, what they don't allow. You mentioned Neuheisel on the air with us yesterday. He thinks the NCAA is going to have no choice but to grant immediate eligibility for these guys because their teams aren't playing, right? I mean, how do you tell a kid you can't go play or shutting things down for 2020? So I think the NCAA may have a bit of a quagmire here, and they may have no choice but to let these guys go play somewhere else. And guys that are juniors and seniors, hell, if you're a senior, you absolutely should be allowed to play right away. And if you're a junior and you were going to go to the NFL anyway, it's hard to tell a kid he can't play somewhere else, man. So it's a friggin' mess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about, like, so we do, like, we talk obviously a lot of fantasy sports and stuff like that. And I think about guys like, you know, Chris Olave, a wide receiver for Ohio State, who really had some beautiful moments last year, had like 12 touchdowns, and, you know, but he was behind a couple of guys that got drafted. And he's one of these players who right now, if he doesn't get to play again, he's probably going to be a round two, round three pick. But if he has the opportunity to play with a quarterback like Justin Fields, he could have really elevated his stock. And it's just such a shame for these guys that they may not have that opportunity. So I really hope that some of them at least can have the opportunity to transfer and play. Last question for you is regarding recruiting. Do you think the Pac-12 is, and the Big Ten, of course, do you think they'll take a hit with recruiting because of this, and what do you think might
might the NCAA have to do regarding scholarships and stuff like that with, you know, possibly having to grant an extra year of eligibility and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if you're taking away a chance for a kid to play, period, in 2020, which this is not the NCAA doing this, this is the conferences doing this.
Right.
And I think you got to give a kid an extra year. You know, if a kid is a sophomore right now and he was looking at, you know, three more years left, you can't say that, well, you're going to burn one of those years doing nothing because we're not going to play football. And then you come back and you got 2 years left. I'm sorry. That sounds ridiculous to me. So I think everybody gets an extra year. It just, you know, everything just rolls over. If they want it, they can take it. If they don't, they can leave it. But I think from an NCAA perspective, you're going to have to give these guys the extra year and you're going to have to guarantee their scholarship, which basically means a lot of these players are going to get paid or the school will be on the hook to cover them financially, which means academics and everything else that comes along with being a football player. They're going to be spending an extra year, you know, one extra year on a lot of players. And that's a lot of money, you know, coming out of the budget. I mean, and Stephen, keep this in mind that not only are we doing that for football players, but you're doing that for volleyball players, cross-country athletes as well. And on top of that, you're paying the extra year for the spring athletes from last year that had their seasons blown to hell. And they're coming back again for an extra year this year. So the amount of money that these schools are going to have to spend to cover these extra years for these athletes is ridiculous. And they're the ones making that call, right? I mean, the Pac-12 made that call. Washington, Oregon, USC, UCLA, the presidents made that call. So either A, they feel like they've got the money and they can take care of it, or B, they have a plan to lay people off, furlough people, and God forbid, cut sports and cover their ass that way. So I'm very curious to see what the financials look like when it's all said and done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, it already is, but we're just entering into the mess. There's still so much ahead that we don't know. And oh man, it's such a bummer. And you know, I didn't want to tell you this off the start, but being a huge Oregon Ducks fan, and our 2021 recruiting class just being absolutely insane, and now like not knowing what this is going to mean for the future, and just, you know, all that, like, even, but I mean, even if, you know, you're not a top 10 ranked program, like if you're a Huskies fan right now, I just had to throw a little dig in there. It's such a bummer because like, you don't know what this is going to mean for the future. I mean, the Pac-12, like, I mean, you guys have a new coach in Jimmy Lake. He's trying to build something special there. You've got teams like Oregon that are really solidified under their coach, Cristobal. And now you lose a year. Who knows what is going to happen in the short term here. It's really a shame. Right.
Well, I just think this, I was talking to John Canzano this morning about that, you know, which fan base is more down about 2020 not happening. And I mean, I think it's got to be Oregon, right? You guys probably felt like you had a better chance to win the North, you know, maybe a chance to do some damage. I mean, the quarterback is obviously up in the air. You got Shupp, you got guys like Millen fighting for the job, obviously. So who knows who would have taken over for Justin Herbert. But, you know, the idea that there were some fans that were pumping up Penei Sewell, maybe not to win the Heisman, but at least to get to New York. And that's not going to happen. You know, an appearance in the Pac-12 championship game, not going to happen. A lot of guys on this football team that are going to be draft eligible are going to be gone. You know, Penei Sewell likely will never, ever, 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 ever play again in Oregon. His time is over. You know, guys in that secondary that are so good, their time is likely over. So, you know, all the time that the coaches have put in getting these guys ready for this moment, and now it's not going to happen. You know, for the coaches, it sucks. All the practice time, all the film room, the weight training, everything that they've done to put them in a position where they are at their best as upperclassmen to go out and win a Pac-12 championship. And that's not just at Oregon. That's at every school in the Pac-12. Utah, UW, all those schools. You put in all this effort, you get to within 5 feet of the top of the mountain, and then they pull the fucking plug on you. Sorry, but it sucks.
It sucks, man. I was depressed already, but you really just encapsulated it so well. Like, oh my God, you got me even more riled up.
Well, it's brutal, man. It's tough on everybody. And again, I'm not saying it's the wrong decision by the Pac-12. You know, I'm not smart enough. You know, I'm not an epidemiologist. I don't have a damn clue about all this stuff. I think we have to really wait and see, man, how this plays out. And I'm telling you right now, if the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 play and they get away with a season relatively unscathed, it's going to make the Pac-12 look awful, because the perception of the Pac-12 to begin with is that they're soft. And somebody says, well, what about the Big Ten? Well, the Big Ten doesn't have the perception the Pac-12 does, right? The Big Ten will take a hit, but not like the Pac-12 does. The Pac-12 is starting from the toilet. The Big the Big Ten does not have that perception that the Pac-12 does. So a conference that is already looked at by a lot of people as soft is going to look even softer. And that concerns me for recruiting. It concerns me for the perception of the Pac-12 down the road, big time.
Yeah, no, I think that's spot on. I guess the only silver lining we have right now is that at least the Seahawks had their first official camp practice at the VMAC today. So hopefully we still have some Seahawk football to look forward to, and the NFL in general. But I know for guys like ourselves who really do care so much about college football, and even just like the players and the coaches, like you said, it's a real heartbreaker.
Yeah, it's a bummer, total bummer. So, you know, we'll see. I'm curious to see how we get through this. And, you know, from a radio perspective, we're going to do a lot of Husky stuff, you know, players, coaches, ex-players, blah, blah, blah. We're not going to just forget about UW. And I would think that stations in Portland, Eugene, would do the same thing. You know, you want to stay relevant if you're the Ducks, and stay relevant if you're Washington. So these guys are going to have a lot of work to do, you know, to keep themselves at top of mind for sports fans who will just gravitate to the NFL and maybe even gravitate to other conferences around America. I'm already seeing fans on Twitter talking about adopting teams for 2020. So it's lunacy, man. It is just hell on earth from a football fan's perspective, and something you never, ever, 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 did I say ever, ever thought you would have to deal with, man. It's a bummer.
It really is. Well, Softy, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. And everyone go give Dave a follow at Softy KJR on Twitter. Check out their show. They'll be on in just a couple of hours here. So thanks again, Dave. Really appreciate your time.
All right, man. Go Dogs. See ya.
Yeah, bye.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is back in action, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use the promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.